Creating is hard as hell, but community can make all the difference. Join We Create Daily, our community of storytellers of all kinds who, like you, are looking to advance their craft, careers, and creativity. Join our membership community today at thecreatedaily.com. That's thecreatedaily.com. And make your creative journey a little easier alongside like-minded storytellers just like you. What I had to come to the realization about is that the business actually really isn't in the business of making things. We think it is. But if you think about the actual volume of material that the business gets versus how much it actually makes, most projects never make it to screen. I remember there used to be like a statistic or breakdown. I can't remember what it was, but it felt like you more easily could get struck by lightning than get a show on the air. We did it.
Woo woo!
We're here. We are here with a whole podcast. A whole podcast. Not half a podcast. A whole podcast.
That's right. 100.
Welcome to the Creative Cut Up Podcast, a lively and honest space for storytellers that sits at the intersection of craft, business, and independence. I'm Felicia Pride, a writer, director, producer, head honey at Honey Child, and head storyteller of the Create Daily, a platform I founded in 2012 to help storytellers, especially those of us who are historically excluded, thrive creatively and professionally. And I'm here with my co-host because we got some cutting up to do.
We sure do. I'm Drea Donna Rowland, the creative executive at Honey Child and a writer and producer.
Yes, she is.
And I'm Georgette Pierre, a voice actor and producer. You can hear it, right?
Oh, we hear that voice. Right. Oh, we hear the voice. Oh, yeah. So join us weekly where we talk shop and smack and share the good, the bad, and the ugly. And from three different perspectives, which I love, providing tangible tips to support your creative practice, your career, and your artist self. Because we all know that being an artist is hard as hell.
Oof. Say that.
But the Creative Cut Up is here to help. Shall we begin, ladies?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Hey y'all, another installment of the Creative Cut Up Podcast.
I know, we're missing Drea, she's in London town.
She is in Europe, honey, living her best life.
She is.
So we're gonna have to hold it down, but I think we'll be okay.
Yes.
But super, super excited about all the response that we've been getting to the podcast. So keep, you know, sharing, keep telling your friends, keep subscribing, reviews yes, help us a lot. So anything that you could do, if you're loving what you're hearing, is so beneficial to us. So thank you.
Absolutely. And shout out to everyone that's actually written a review so far as well. They've been really, really uplifting to see, and it's really resonating with people, Felicia. So shout out to.
We love that. You know, this has kind of been the busiest time of my life, Georgette, which is wild because it's a weird time in the industry. I think what happened in my case is that a lot of projects that had sold before the strike, after the strike, everybody was like, we want them now. And I was like, whoa. And I was staffed at the same time. So it's been really, really crazy. And one of the things that I know took place during this time was we had that wonderful announcement about the sale of 7 Days in June to Amazon, which is based on the New York Times bestselling book. And it's in partnership with Kinetic and Will Packer Media. And what I realized is that a lot of people don't know what it means to sell a show. So I want to talk about that because I surely didn't before getting into this business. Like, what does it mean? There's so many different sort of stages and caveats and that sort of thing. So that's what we're going to talk about today and break down. What does it mean when you sell a show or a film idea?
Yeah, I think because there's an allure behind getting your idea on this screen. And I don't know too many people that have actually done it successfully, right? Start with selling a pitch and what that looks like and how you prepare for those things. But what also happens from the business aspect once you get the creative piece flowing?
Yeah. But I know you're kind of interested in this. Are you in the process of trying to sell
something? I am.
Catch me up.
Yeah. So I am working with my creative collaborator. And so he and I had an idea that I threw at him 2 years ago. And the idea has continued to shape and form and change based off of feedback that we've gotten from his team or even talent that we're trying to get attached as a host. And so what's been interesting is, one, the length of time it takes to even get an idea in front of buyers.
Ciao.
And so, okay. I think I've changed this idea at least three different times. There's been three different iterations of it. And so we're currently on an iteration that we feel really strongly about. And so I was like, what does this process look like? Mm-hmm. And we have never sold anything before. We have never pitched anything before. And so this is our first time going through it from different aspects.
Well, I want to walk down memory lane and talk about the first TV show that I ever sold. And I think that'll give you insight into this business, because what I had to come to the realization about is that the business actually really isn't in the business of making things. We think it is. But if you think about the actual volume of material that the business gets versus how much it actually makes, most projects never make it to screen. I remember there used to be like a statistic or breakdown. I can't remember what it was, but it felt like you more easily could get struck by lightning than get a show on the air, right? So I want to talk through some of the languaging around things and also just some of the challenges on why it's so hard to get something on air.
Right.
So the first project I ever sold was an adaptation of Martha Southgate's Third Girl from the Left. I did not have any idea about the process at that time. This was probably around 2017. And I was a baby writer, but I had mentioned that this was a book that I loved. I mentioned that to my agent at the time, or an agent who was hip pocketing me at the time. I love this book because he also represented the producers on it, which were Will Packer Media at the time. I got a meeting. So usually what happens, the first step, even if it's a project you're taking out yourself, or if it's an OWA, an OWA is an open writing assignment. So producers and studios and networks will have projects that they have internally that they need writers for. So they call that an OWA, where they will bring in as many writers as they want to meet about the project and eventually pitch on the project. So this was an open writing assignment, although it was a project that I had wanted to do, right? So usually the first step, at least the first step for me, is I like to meet with the producers. Sometimes producers are like, come in with a take. I'm like, I don't even know you. Do you know what I mean? Why am I coming with a take? One, I don't know you, meaning I don't know if I would even want to work with you. Two, I have not heard how you've talked about this project. So it's really important for me to hear how producers talk about a project for an OWA, right? I want to know what's important to them. I want to know how they think about it, because that's going to help me when I'm developing my take or my pitch, right? They kind of go hand in hand, take or pitch. So I usually have a meeting, right? And, you know, earlier in my career, it was kind of like you're being interviewed. Now, to me, it's like, is this a good fit mutually? Right? So I go into meetings, I don't feel like I'm being interviewed necessarily. They are, but I'm also interviewing them, right? I want to, one, know if these are people that I want to work with. What are their instincts like, their creative instincts? So you have this meeting, and questions that I like to ask are about the history of a project. Really, really important. Of course, you want to get some intel from your team, right? But I also like to hear how the producers talk about it. What is the history of the project? Has it been taken out before? Was there another writer on it? Do you all have the rights? Another important question that you or your reps can ask. Also, I always like to know, and this may not be a question I ask myself, but I make sure my reps find out, how many writers are they meeting with? And who are those writers? That also gives me a sense of what's going on, what's going down. So I like to know about the history of the project. I also like to know why they're excited about this project, because that helps me to know what they're seeing, because it may be something different that I'm excited about, which is fine. If they're like excited about something that I think I'm not excited about, like they're trying to attract a certain piece of talent and I'm not excited about that, it just helps. Then I like to know what they're thinking about tonally. So I like to ask about tone and comps. Like, how do you see this show? Have you talked about some comps? Usually they have not. So you're like, okay. And sometimes the idea can be, you know, based on IP, or it could be we want to do a workplace comedy in a funeral home. Like, that's it. That's all you get. So I like to know about tone, because that could be 9 feet under, right? Well, workplace comedy couldn't, but if they're saying the world of funeral homes, it could be 9 feet under, or it could be a workplace comedy. So I want to know tonally what they're thinking about. And what are some comps? What are some types of shows they're thinking about? And then I also want to know, where do they want to take it? Because that gives me more ideas about tone and where they're envisioning this project. Do they want to take it to streamers? Do they want to take it to premium cable? Is this a broadcast play? Because that determines how the pitch is going to be, changing the tone of the pitch, right? Also probably changing the story. Broadcast, we're thinking 20 episodes versus streamer, we're thinking 8 to 10. So those are some of the questions that I like to get out. During that meeting, I do iterate my excitement for the project and why I'm excited about it. But that's about as far as I go. I do not do takes or pitches on the first call. Then I go and I prepare my pitch, right? And however long that takes, and do my process and all that good stuff. And then you go and pitch the producers. Okay. And I try to get my pitch as studio ready as possible so that the producers have something strong to respond to, and that hopefully they don't have a lot of notes. Because if they have a lot of notes, we're not on the same page about what this show is. And that's an opportunity for me to consider, do I want to stay in this game? So that it's a good sort of barometer, right? And then once I do my pitch for the producers, then it's time to go typically to the studio. Studios are the people who finance projects. Okay. So studios will ultimately be your boss, because they'll be the ones that are cutting your checks. Although producers, and we can probably should have a podcast episode about non-writing EPs.
Love that.
You know, they range in what they do, and in impact, right? But they are usually the liaison between you and the studio. But the studio is ultimately your boss. And then the network, the home, the eventual home of the project, will be who pays the studio, right? But the network also will chime in on things when you get to that stage, because it's going to be on their network, right? What you find sometimes is that a place like Netflix and Amazon will operate as both a studio and a network, right? So they'll be cutting checks, but it's also going to go on their platform. But once you get your feedback from your producer, you incorporate that feedback, now it's time to go to the studio, right? And typically, there'll be one studio in play, because either that producer has a deal there, or that's where it's been targeted, or whatever the case is. You pitch the studio, and the studio can say yes or no, all right? Typically, it's not as hard as you'd think for the studio to say yes. And the reason is because they actually haven't bought it. So when people say that they've sold a show and it's to a studio, that's not actually true. What they've done is they've set up a show at a studio. So for instance, if you sell it to the studio 20th Century, or you sell it to CBS Studios, we had a project recently where we quote unquote sold it. What you really have done is set it up at CBS Studios. You've set it up at 20th. And what happens at this stage, if the studio says yes, they want to move forward, they do what is called an if-com deal. Okay. The if-com deal is basically negotiating all the rights up front with the studio. Acting on your ideas is a form of self-love. And when I decided to write the Creative Comeback Workbook and Journal, it was with you in mind. Storytellers with stories inside of you that you need to get out into the world. But life, fear, uncertainty has a way of leaving us stuck. But no more. It's time to reclaim our creative practice and get unstuck. The Creative Comeback Workbook and Journal can help you get back on creative track. 30 days of dynamic prompts, exercises to stimulate creativity, alongside motivational quotes, journal pages, and more. If you're ready to create again, get your copy of the Creative Comeback Workbook and Journal today at creativecomeback.com. That's creativecomeback.com. Because it's never too late to become the artist you always wanted to be. Which kind of is beneficial to them, right? Because if you go out and it's a hot buying, multiple buyers, you get paid the same amount. So they negotiate all the rights up front before they go out to the buyers. And it's called an if-come deal. So you actually haven't sold it yet. You just have a studio attached that is saying to you, if a buyer ends up wanting to buy this, then this is what we're going to pay you.
Gotcha.
So that's the if-come deal. So when people have set up projects, you're not getting paid yet. All right. Also, the process to do the deal making for an if-come deal can take months. Okay. Months. I've had a project that took months because they're making everybody's deals. They're making the producer's deals. They're making your deals. They're making any IP deals. It could take months. Okay. Then once that deal is done, then you and the studio and the producers go out to buyers to see if anybody will buy it. Okay. And that's when you probably go wide. You'll go to, say it's a streamer, you'll go to Peacock, you'll go to Apple, you'll go to Paramount Plus, Netflix, Amazon. So pitch Palooza around town. Usually do it, try to do it within the same time period, because if you get any yeses, you can leverage those. So you say you pitch them, you get a one yes. Okay. Fantastic. You keep pitching because you want to hopefully leverage those offers. Once you have a network on board, that is when you have officially sold a show. And then that is when then you'll have a creative kickoff call with the network, the studio, the producers. The network may have notes and they'll send you off the script. And that's when you'll get paid. Your first installment of your script payment.
So the network is essentially the buyer because it's going to be distributed on their platform. And
yes. They're the ones that are going to pay the studio.
Which is helping to produce it, essentially fronting the cost to make the show that the... Right. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
The studio is paying for the show. They're making their money from the network. So you get commenced is what we say. You have that kickoff creative call with all parties involved and you get commenced. And usually what happens then is then you go off and you write the script. You write the pilot script, okay? And then that pilot script, you usually get notes from the producers before you send it to the studio and network. Sometimes you may send it to the studio first and then the network, but you do get notes from your producers before you send it off. And then you'll get notes from those studio and network folks to revise it. That's usually the next step is a revision. Now, that script will determine in the broadcast world whether or not you get a pilot order. Now, the script in the predominantly streaming world determines many things. It could be it's the end of the road for you. They didn't like the script. It could be let's commission a second script. That's happened to me previously. It could be let's open up a mini room, which is now called a pre-greenlight development room, I think is what it's called now in the new WGA MBA. But that script determines the next step. It could be let's get a series order, meaning they're going to order all and they're going to send you to a writer's room. You're going to go through that process. Still not on the air yet. Okay. That's the most important part that we need to think about.
Right.
It's still not on the air. It is so difficult to get a show on the air. It is even more difficult in this new terrain that we're living in to get a show on the air. There's just so many steps. There are people who get mini rooms. I had a friend who had a mini room, turned in 4 scripts. The answer was no. Okay. I've seen friends who have gone into production, right? Essentially got a green light into production. All episodes scrapped and did not go to air. So there's many different challenges and obstacles that happen along the way. And usually what happens is it becomes a different show. And no one's excited about that show anymore because of all the notes and all the development and all the lack of trust for creators is one major obstacle, one major reason. Also, these streamers often, you know, just their mandates change, right? So rapidly. So what was part of their mandate doesn't fit their mandate anymore, Right. So there's many, many reasons, most of them not having anything to do with you or the quality of your script. Now, yes, there are some bad scripts that are turned in for sure. But when you get to a certain point, it stops being about the script and it starts becoming about something else.
So now connecting the dots back to the script. So when you, from the beginning, when you were talking about The Pitch Happens, at this point, you are basically vying for the opportunity to write the pilot script that actually gets taken through the steps that you just discussed. Okay.
Now there's some creators who have that much clout. They go and they pitch something to get a series order. Right. But usually they need at least the script to determine that pilot script to determine next steps.
So that specifically is the process when there's an open writing assignment and you're the writer looking to get attached to a potential.
Yes. Okay. It's the same if you take a project out yourself. So for instance, in Honey Child, we got the shopping agreement. So we didn't actually have an option. We didn't pay for an option, but we got a shopping agreement for a short period of time to take it out to the marketplace. And the first thing that we did, we started with producers, right? Because it wasn't an OWA. We went out to a bunch of producers because we wanted to have established producers on board. We could have went straight to studios for sure, but we wanted to have, thinking about a package, we knew having a reputable or a production company with a certain track record or talent led would help us in the sales process. And even at that point too, even under OWAs, there may be a point where you're like, we want to package this, meaning we want to attach talent, we want to attach a director, anything to make it stronger to hopefully sell it. So we were able to find a producer who we felt really aligned with our creative vision, and they had a deal at a studio already. They had a deal at CBS Studios. So we went and we pitched CBS Studios, and CBS Studios said yes. Okay. So now we just finished deal making 3 months later. And so now it's time to go out to the buyers. And one thing you want to be clear on is these studios. So CBS Studios, who do we think the first buyers we're going to go to, right? Paramount Plus, may go to BET Plus if it makes sense, but they go to their buyers and their home buyers at first. And their home buyers are not obligated to buy it either, which is interesting.
Right.
It's really, really interesting. But you go there first, but you also want to check these studios to see where they usually go and where they can go. Because some studios don't actually go out beyond their home buyers. So you want to make sure that's the case. But even if they can sell anywhere, do they sell anywhere? Right? Is another thing you want to find out and be clear on. So our next step is to then, now that we have a studio, we set it up at the studio. If come deals are closed, now it's time to go to the buyers, and we're going to go out wide to both streamers and broadcast.
Have you ever skipped having to do an if come deal and something was not necessarily straight to order, but they bought it, they wanted it, they wanted to start at least the development process for anything?
But I have skipped having to pitch studios. So it's just automatically set up, which is great. Sometimes there are OWAs that are already set up at a streamer, meaning it's set up at the studio and you have a buyer attached, right? That can be great, but also risky because that means there's only one buyer. So there's been those cases, but no, I have not skipped those steps.
I've heard different things when I've gone to different workshops with development executives. Sometimes they're like, too many attachments isn't good. If you get attachments from this place, that place, it'll help your project. Obviously, the terrain is different. What have you seen the balance of, right? Curious on what you've experienced as well as it related to one too many attachments or not enough or not the right attachments.
Not the right attachments. That's usually what happens. Usually I find with folks who are first starting out, their cousin's a producer, their grandmama is a producer. And this is not attractive to studios, because everyone has to cut a deal and the studios are trying to figure out what the value add is. So what's important is, what is the value that folks who are attached are going to provide? And even, you know, some, not all talent is going to move the needle, right? And sometimes studios don't want to get locked into just working with certain talent, especially if they feel like they're not going to move the needle. So it's those sorts of things that you want to be talking about with your producers about strategy. Is this a person we really think is going to move the needle for this particular project in this particular marketplace? I'd like to keep projects very, very lean as much as possible. But you'll see certain projects will have 14 million producers on it, right? That's cutting up into money. That makes an expensive show. Now, is it worth it? Are all these people value add? Those are questions you have to ask, but it does make it a more expensive show. The more producers that you have on board, that means the more producers that are part of a pie that is only so big. And it also cuts into your pie, which is wild because you're going to be doing most of the work. So those are considerations to have. But for me, it's all about the value add. Like, folks bring me projects all the time, and there's too many people on here who have no idea how to operate in the business. What value add is that for me?
That makes sense. I know talent as one particular aspect could be a hem up, but you just never know what they want, right? I think that's the thing. Like, you're kind of,
well, they don't know what they want,
right?
But you have to understand whether this talent is going to move the needle for this project. And how to position the reasoning for it, right? How to position the reasoning for it. How to make the sale about this talent. All of it is selling.
Yeah.
You're selling yourself. You're selling the project. You're selling the talent attached. So those things that you need to think about as a producer. Like, the thing that I think sometimes we don't remember as writers in particular, we have to put our producerial hats on when we're going out to sell shows. I have to think like a producer in terms of how I'm positioning the show in the marketplace. What attachments might make this show, this package, hot? Those are the things I have to think about. Producerial, what homes make the most sense for that? Those are producer questions.
Yeah. And we've definitely been going down the rabbit hole with different things. And I want to make sure everything that we're doing does make sense. And so it's just been really helpful to hear. Well, at least what that process sounds like. So then what happens on the ideal side of things commencing with development hell, as they like to call it? What does that start to look like?
Oh. Most projects just languish in Hollywood. Most projects aren't actually made. You know, if you look at the track record of even some of our most prolific creators, yes, they've gotten shows on the air, but what about all the other shows they did get on the air? What about all the pilots that they've sold that have not seen the light of day? What do we do about those projects? For me, it's very hard to stomach. I don't write just to write. You know what I mean? This is a very specific story that I think is important to tell. How do I reconcile that? Once Hollywood says a project's dead, then I just say, okay, no. So that's something that I'm thinking about. How do I reconcile that piece of things, because I don't believe in that project being dead. I don't believe that. Because also, we have to think about who's making the decisions. The number of decision makers is very small, and they're in a bubble. They're in a Hollywood bubble, making decisions, programming decisions for hundreds of millions of Americans at the minimum, the world, possibly, of all different kinds of people. Who they have no context for.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they're making these decisions. So it's very hard for me to stomach that being the reason why a story that I think is super important doesn't make it to the big screen. I'm always like, okay, Hollywood didn't want to do something with it in its capacity. How else can we do something with it? It's too important to just let die. So in development hell is exactly that. It's just notes, a lot of notes, trying to figure out the show, trying to minimize risk in many ways. Do we introduce new characters who we feel more comfortable about? Do we change the world so we feel more comfortable about it? Ooh, the marketplace is changing. Do we change it? So it's a lot of that. And then just hurry up and wait. You know, it's a lot of hurry up and wait. So the development hell is literally just the revising process of the script. And often it doesn't turn out better than what you had in mind, what all of you had in mind. Often it's not better. It's not better.
What variants have you seen with scripted television shows and film? Because obviously you're telling a more contained story. I don't know if films are just as hard or if it's just stories in general that are hard to get to the screen.
Well, the thing that I've liked about film so far is that I haven't had to do as many rounds of pitching. So all the films that I have sold, you go to one buyer. So for instance, I had a open writing assignment that came through a production company, and they were already in talks with a buyer, which is a studio. There's no network, right, that you have to pitch to. So you just pitch that studio and you get your answer. And that's it. So it's not pitching a bunch of studios in that way. These are for studio films, right? With Look Back At It, for instance, I'm sure we'll go out on a bunch of different meetings about it. So that does take place, and you may have a pitch and you pitch it to different studios. That does happen, but it is still a lot less pitching than on the TV side, because I have found not as many entities involved. You've cut out one middle person, which is a network. So that's one thing, but it's very similar. It's very similar in that you pitch the producers first. They have feedback. And here's a place that can also get long. That's why I don't like to develop necessarily with producers. I like to have my own creative process and then bring as ready of a pitch to producers, because that back and forth can take a while. And I don't have time for that, right? I want something really strong so you can react to it, and then I can make the changes, we can move on. So you pitch your producers. This is whether you take it out or not. So I remember when I did take out a pitch, the most people that we were pitching were producers. So when I did take out a film pitch, we pitched a bunch of producers, and then we chose a producer that had a deal at Lionsgate. And so then we pitched Lionsgate. Lionsgate said no. We could then go to other places, but it was like a life right situation. I just wanted to get out of it. I was like, deuces. But you may pitch a bunch of producers in the film space, and then you go to the studios and pitch them as well. But very similar process. You don't set up if-come deals, though. So after you pitch your producers, then you go to the studios. The studios buy it or they don't. And if they buy it, you have your kickoff call, you're commenced, you're off the script. Feature films also have a deadline typically in their contracts. Pilot scripts do not typically. So you get 3 months to write a feature that you've sold off a pitch. Very quick. Very, very quick. But that's also why I like it. In and out. Give me my money. Bye.
Yes. I got to go. Yep. Are you still dealing with the non-writing EPs on this side of things for the feature film side? Or no, you're dealing with the producer that is actually working on the feature film with the studio?
They will be the producer on the ground. There's not really non-writing EPs in that way. Technically, they're non-writing EPs, but we don't call them that in film.
Okay.
They're the producers. They're going to be the ones that produce the movie. But even then, so I got my money, right? But like for a certain project that I have at Universal, it was looking good. It was moving towards green light. Then the pandemic happened. I was like, now it's like, oh, there's some new renewed energy around it. So films take a long time to make. You might get your money quicker, but they take a long time to get made. There's professional screenwriters who've been writing for 20 years who've never had a produced feature. I am blessed to the first feature I sold was produced. But that's really, really hard and really, really rare.
How does Honey Child, or how does someone's own entity position themselves to be able to be more involved in the process creatively?
Yeah, skin in the game, right? So we are positioning ourselves to actually bring the projects. And then it helps with negotiating. So for one project that we had the shopping agreement for, the book, that's our skin in the game. Not only are we bringing this book, we're also bringing a writer and a showrunner. What are you bringing to the table? When you think about what the conversation can be, that's what the conversation can be. And I think you also just kind of have to be involved as a producer would be involved, right? You kind of have to insert yourself in that way. I think a lot of writers just don't want to, which is fine. That's what producers are for, so that writers don't have to do that. But if you want to be a producer, it's about originating material. And that doesn't have to be original material, but that has to be going after projects, putting them together, bringing forces together, being involved in that way.
Good stuff.
But yeah, selling a project is when you actually sell it to the network or you sell it to the studio. But even then, it's not greenlit. That does not mean it's going to see be on air. It just means that a buyer has bought it and now it's going to go through the development process. It is only on the air when it is on the air. That's the only time it's going to be on the air is when it's on the air.
No, because you see people talking about it on social media, like, I sold 5 shows. And so in your mind, you're thinking these are shows that you're seeing on the screen, not having any thought of like, oh, it's sitting in development purgatory.
Yeah, and may never see the light of day. Selling a show is definitely still no easy feat, but just want folks to understand that doesn't mean because you sold a show that it's going to make it to air. And also, it typically, when it's in development, it's still early in the stages. When you start seeing writer's rooms put together, like, oh, okay, this is getting closer, this is more closer. But writing the pilot stage is still very far off from being on screen. I hope this is helpful for folks.
Yeah. Wonderful.
So this takes us to our...
Segment.
How we create. Yes, how we create, where we share all forms of inspiration that may have stopped us in our tracks, made us laugh, had us shouting, or even reminded us to rest.
Yeah, I'm sitting on 2 things that tie back into the class that you and Drea taught based on about adapting IP. So sometimes I need to watch things that I normally wouldn't watch to get inspiration. So the first thing I watched was Zola. I watched Zola. I know it was based off of 148 tweet thread by this woman that was a stripper. And that shit was wild. And it was wild for so many different reasons. But it was interesting because, one, I didn't think this was a story I would be would connect with. But the things that I thought about was literally the cinematography, how they were using visual cues to tell who these characters were, right? Thinking about the 5 pillars of cinematic storytelling class from the Create Daily, the acting. I was like, Carmen Domingo, you a pimp? Ooh, I was like, this, but it was so good. And so they were in and out. It was an hour and a half. And I was like, okay. So shout out to Zola. And then Mr. and Mrs. Smith, they adapted it for as a television series on Amazon Prime. And I have to say, I like the series better.
I do.
And shout out to the woman that played Jane Smith, Maya Erskine.
I think she's so funny.
I just remember seeing her because I started rewatching Insecure on Netflix. She was Molly's coworker that Molly was so annoyed with that got married or engaged before her. And I was like, look at her.
I loved her on Pen 15. She was fantastic. Okay. That show was hilarious to me.
I have to look that up. Their chemistry on screen was really good. So those are my 2 things for how we create.
Fantastic. Yeah. Janiska Bravo, who directed Zola, I think has such a unique eye. Really, really has a lot of style as a director. Really, really has fantastic
style. Kudos to her.
I've been watching old black 90s sitcoms. Because I like to put them on while I've been writing. Because I've just been writing like crazy woman lately. So I've been watching Martin. I've been watching My Wife and Kids. I don't know if My Wife and Kids was the 90s. I think that was a little bit later. Been watching The Jamie Foxx Show.
And yes.
What I love is just, well, Jamie's just silly. Like the amount of just like silly and fun and comedy and also like risk-taking in the storytelling. I even was thinking about Jamie Foxx. I was like, oh, what a wonderful world of having this hotel. Like, what a great world. I feel like I haven't even seen that world in this way in a long time. So I've just been inspired by 90s black sitcoms.
I'm with you. Living Single stays in the background.
Living Single, Different World, I've been watching as well.
Yeah. Nice.
So, well, thank you so much for tuning in to another installment of the Creative Cut Up podcast. We're so happy that you're here with us and can't wait to do it again next week. Thanks for listening to the Creative Cut Up podcast, a lively and honest space for storytellers that sits at the intersection of craft, business, and independence. Listen to us on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you dig it, subscribe, rate, review, and please tell a friend. If you need help getting back into your creative practice, check out the Creative Comeback Workbook and Journal. You can also join our newsletter and our We Create Daily community, both of which provide even more resources and opportunities to thrive creatively at thecreatedaily.com. And lastly, follow us on Instagram, TikTok, and LinkedIn at The Create Daily. Ever wonder how a novel went from the page to the screen? How an entire film derived from a great magazine article? Or how you get the life rights to tell the story of that fascinating person you met or historical figure you're obsessed with? Learn the process in our new on-demand course called Based On, How to Adapt Books, Articles, and Real-Life Stories for Film and TV. Led by myself, Felicia Pride, Andrea Rowland, Honeychild's creative executive and co-host of the Creative Cut Up podcast, you'll learn the process of optioning and developing IP for adaptation, the nuances of three different types of adaptations, books, articles, life rights, all the development jargon, what Honeychild looks for and how we source, search, and track IP, plus the answers to all of your burning questions. We'll break down the ins and outs of adapting IP and more. You'll get immediate access to our on-demand course for 6 months upon registration. So sign up today at thecreatedaily.com.